Saturday of opening week.
So, how was that? Did you go crazy?
Well, there there really isn't anything to go crazy over. It was kind of a, I would say, much ado about nothing, which, of course, was the opening production, a Shakespearean play, of course, a comedy, and it was directed by Christopher Newton, the former artistic director of the Shaw Festival.
Right. And
I was expecting great things from him because Christopher Newton, in revolutionizing the staging of the works of George Bernard Shaw, he almost single-handedly revived the reputation of Shaw when he was considered kind of musty and didn't have a whole lot to say.
True.
And this is in the 80s and 90s. Newton just breathed new life into George Bernard Shaw. So I was expecting some wonderful things. And really, it's a very solid production of Shakespeare. No bells, no whistles, no new interpretations. Very solid. And it had one glorious component, and that was the casting of the real-life husband and wife team of Ben Carlson and Deborah Hay. Both had starred at Shaw, but Deborah actually was in Stratford in the conservatory when she was very young, so she was kind of a child of Stratford and then went on to other places, including the Shaw. And she was just getting kind of star billing at the Shaw when she came to Stratford to join her husband, Ben, who made a name for himself at the Shaw and has been at Stratford, I think, 3 or 4 years. And he does very, very solid work. He's a wonderful speaker of Elizabethan. He's one of the best speakers of the Bard at Stratford. He reminds me of Nicholas Pinnell and those kinds of classical actors who nailed the language and their enunciation and their diction and their rhythm and everything that is required to speak the language on stage, Carlson has. So he's always the delight. And with Carlson as Benedict and Deborah as Beatrice, they made a very, very good pair. And the relationship that they establish on stage really has chemistry. And they both turned out to be very adept at, you know, some subtle slapstick comedy in addition to the creating the sexual fireworks between those two characters.
Because it's Beatrice and Benedict, and so Ben Carlson, I think he did the best version of Hamlet I've ever seen, or one of the best versions of Hamlet I've ever seen, because it was so easy to follow, and it had everything to do with him. So I totally agree with you. Oh, Much Ado About Nothing is one of my favorite plays because of that couple and because of the wit between them. What about the rest of the cast?
Well, really, to be kind, the supporting cast was that, but nothing memorable.
Nothing
It's been what, maybe about 3 weeks since opening week, and the image I carry with me of that production is Carlson and Hay, and not a whole lot beyond that.
Yeah.
And then a kind of a minor disappointment in Newton, because I was maybe expecting him to do something that would remind me of his great work at the Shaw Festival when he was running the show there.
Okay. What was the next show that you saw?
I'm not quite sure, but I think it might have been 42nd Street.
Okay.
And, of course, the main thing about that musical is the return of we know who, Cynthia Dale.
CD, as she's known from some people.
When she got, Richard Monette left, she was considered to be too close to him, for the liking of the new regime, and it was strongly suggested that she move on, move out. She did, but she did it in a very loud way.
Mm-hmm.
And she went public, which is not that familiar in Canadian theater.
No.
But she voiced her displeasure, and it may well have been kind of a nod to what, I'm not quite sure, but in Des McAnuff's final year as the artistic director at the festival, Cynthia Dale finds her way back. Really, in 42nd Street, although she really isn't considered the heroine or the main female character, because of her return, and because it was a kind of a character that she could have some fun with,
mm-hmm.
she kind of stole the limelight away from the other cast members. But it was a solid production, but I don't think that 42nd Street is one of the classic
musicals.
It's not one of the top 10 or top 20 Broadway style musicals. It's kind of a pastiche, you have to wonder why it's at Stratford, even if you agree with the argument that Stratford is a classical repertory theater company, and if you want to stage the real classical musicals, and enough people subscribe to that notion, and of course in times of decreasing government subsidy for the major art institutions in Canada, in order to survive and prosper, you have to pay your bills, and
you do that
largely through ticket revenues, and the musicals draw.
Yeah.
But should 42nd Street be at Stratford? No, it's not My Fair Lady. It's not Camelot. It's not a
Oklahoma or a Carousel, anything like that.
Exactly. But there you had it, and we will maybe it might be time to turn our attention to the other musical that graced the stage at Stratford during opening week, and that was Your Good Man Charlie Brown. At the Avon Theater. I am much more kind of strident about that production. I don't think it has any business at Stratford.
Not really. It was directed by Donna Fior, and I guess for looking for a kid's audience, but it's not like it's Charles Schultz. So,
well, it's not the original. You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. It's the adaptation of the original, and they try to turn Charles Schultz and Peanuts, which is by our standards, like it or not, pretty white Wonder Bread.
But they tried to
spruce it up, and with some rap and bring in other components that has nothing to do with the Peanuts comic strip. And even though it is designed for children and families, it would only appeal to those old enough to remember the comic strip.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's very little that a child who is unfamiliar with the comic strip would get out of the musical. I don't think they would understand the allusions and the metaphors, as well as some of the vignettes, which are drawn specifically from the Peanuts comic strip. And to me, watching adult actors play kids is embarrassing, and I actually got a letter by somebody who saw the production and agreed with my assessment, and said that he had his daughters at the show, and his daughters mistake the adult actors for high school students. And my rebuttal to that would be, do we go to Stratford and spend significant money in tickets to see adult actors who are mistaken for high school students. The whole idea, it just, to me, bizarre. It diminishes what Stratford should be doing, which is introducing classical theater to all audiences, yeah. Young and old.
Yep.
Stratford has had various kinds of initiatives and programs in the past aimed at children and families, but your good man Charlie Brown is a dumbed-down version of, you know, Alice Through the Looking Glass or The Three Musketeers, or even The Diary of Anne Frank or To Kill a Mockingbird, all things which are designed for families that Stratford has presented. That I think fits more comfortably and appropriately in the festival mandate.
I thought it was a weird offshoot, but there was something that opened, like that played in May at the Studio Theater before the actual grand opening of the season. That was McComber. Do you know anything about that?
I did not see that. My colleague Joel Rubinoff reviewed that for the Record. And most of the Toronto media did not review the show. I don't know why.
I saw it.
But, you know, The Simpsons doing Macbeth doing The Simpsons, however you want to view it. At least you're dealing with a clash of art or pop culture from two different eras, and I think there is a place for that at Stratford, and they handled it appropriately. It was not a part of the formal season. It was kind of a prelude. It was interesting. It's by a Canadian comic playwright.
Yes, yeah.
And I think I praise that and encourage Stratford to do more of that.
I thought,
but that's very different than your good man Charlie Brown.
I thought it was hilarious. And Rick Miller is going to be back next year. He's working on a project now, a large scale project for Stratford, and I think he's going to become part of the company. So that should be really interesting. Because you didn't see McComber, and because I went to see it and I met Rick Miller and he gave me a CD and autographed it and all that kind of stuff. Here's a piece from McComber called Tragedy on Coral FM. We'll be right back with Robert Reed.
When the author's dead and you feel you've been gypped, you can always bribe the performer to modify the script. I'm the king, I'm the king. Kiss my ass, kiss my ring. Old King Donkey's kind of funky when he has a chance to sing. Excellent, excellent. Don't be cross, don't you curse. We have seen much, much worse. Keanu Reeves as Hamlet, mangling every verse. To be, well, Shakespeare's gone, hide your tears. He's been dead 400 years. And yes, he may be rolling in his grave. But we say fire on all you purists. This Macbeth is for the tourists. It's entertainment that they crave, not tragedy. Why be good money for a tragedy?
When life is enough of a tragedy.
That's no way to end a show. Take it away, Sean Connery.
Play it fast, play it hard, play it big in disregard. Those pompous types who think that this is dumbing down the bard.
Guilty as charged. Back in 1603, the bard was pop culture, you see. The masses came to theater and didn't watch TV.
Oh my God.
Did you laugh? Did you grin? Did the novelty wear thin? A one-joke concept stretched into a play?
It may not be Polanski,
but it may be pee my pantsky.
And you'll never see Macbeth in the same way. Guy has a tragedy.
What's the big deal with tragedy?
I'm tragic.
Tragedy. It's the dumbest word I ever heard.
Tragedy. That's no way to end a show.
Some would say that we are past our prime.
But turn the TV on, you'll find us every time.
Consumer-driven artistry has me so distraught.
Why not milk your cash cow for everything it's got?
23 years, man.
To play Macduff was kind of rough, but I think I did the job.
And now you're back to being a big, fat, drunken slob.
Aww.
Back at home, life goes on. I'm not a queen, I'm just a pawn.
My head has been chopped off, Marge. Can you sew it back on? The play's done, it's been fun, but before you up and run,
there's one thing to remember as you go. Tell your friends, tell your mom to visit MacHomer.com to buy a little trinket from our show.
Tragedy,
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 tragedy, tragedy.
This whole experience has been a tragedy.
Tragedy. My whole life was a tragedy.
Tragedy.
Y tragedia es muy bueno.
Tragedy.
Tragedy. You're looking up my cute man.
Tragedy.
Instead of telling jokes, everybody croaks.
And that's no way to end the show.
Tragedy.
That was Rick Miller. And tragedy from his CD called Rick Miller Songs from My Shows. So I'm sitting in the studio. My special guest is Robert Reed from the Waterloo Region Record. And we're sitting here discussing the Stratford Shakespeare season 2012. Because there's and lots of stuff to talk about. We were just talking about pirates. What did you see, or would you like to go in the order that you saw stuff?
No, because I forget the order, Carl. So actually, maybe bundling all of the musicals together, because Pirates was one of three musicals that opened opening week, which I think is pretty much unprecedented. In fact, the four musicals this year, including the Canadian musical Wanderlust, they outnumber the Shakespearean plays.
I know.
4-3, and I can't remember in my more than 25 years covering the festival when there's been three musicals all opening week. Now, Pirates of Penzance, Stratford has had a long history of mounting Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, and they've done, for the most part, a very good job. Brian McDonald, who all the opening week productions, pretty much, including Pirates of Penzance. I believe it was in the 80s, over about five seasons, he did for Gilbert and Sullivan at Stratford what Christopher Newton did for Shaw.
Yeah, I agree.
At the Shaw Festival. And this production, directed by Ethan McSweeney,
who I love.
When I read the notes about it, and he was going to kind of incorporate the steampunk imagery, but what happened is that the whole production kind of played with an idea and didn't develop it, so it turned out to be pretty much a dog's breakfast.
I thought, okay, this is a show within a show, but the subtext between the two different, you're right, it wasn't really explained.
Yes, and that was a ripoff of the production a couple of years ago, Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah,
where
right,
they actually had J.M. Barrie in the play, and they did that brilliantly. And this started out to be quite interesting, but that trope or idea was dropped. It wasn't developed.
Yeah, it didn't,
So it turned out to be what? What did the kind of the opening prelude have to do with the production itself? And that was the same with the whole steampunk imagery. They didn't develop it.
I didn't really get steampunk from it.
There were a couple of things, for example, there was kind of a clock mechanism that was
The clock. Yeah.
And there were just some minor things, but it wasn't developed. So again, it was a missed opportunity. And that crippled the production all the way through. Seeing sidekick of Cynthia Dale in Street Legal.
David Johnson.
He plays
Major General Stanley.
Yes, thank you. And he couldn't sing, and it wasn't a case of an actor who is an actor and he's singing passably. He couldn't keep up to the rhythm. He fell behind the orchestration. He couldn't enunciate. He could not handle the lyrical and melodic demands of
that song. Yeah, and it's not easy to sing.
It takes a real singer and or an actor who can sing. You know, and he was not an Eric Donkin or a Douglas Chamberlain or one of the many stars that Brian McDonald produced.
Wonky Oren, anybody like
yes,
amazing.
So basically, Pirates. The other thing too, I'm getting sick and tired of, are these sets, irrespective of the nature of the musical and or the time period, but they're basically scaffolding.
Well, see, I figured because of the opening part that, this is in a theater and maybe it's an amateur production, I thought, well, I guess they can get away with those flats, but they look like they're right out of a high school production.
I saw pretty much the same thing in West Side Story, pretty much the same thing in Jesus Christ Superstar, with variations on the scaffolding theme. And had they developed that idea of, you know, an operetta within an operetta,
that might have then worked a little better.
I could have seen the relevance, but they didn't.
No.
And it just turned out to be, and the set is so large, there was virtually no dancing in it because there wasn't enough room.
No, I kind of wondered, I thought, okay, the Avon, although I've seen Pirates done at the Avon before.
Oh, yes. But
in a much better way.
Well, more room. Mm-hmm. Like they opened up the stage and they did not have a
ladders
oppressively oppressive set like this production did. So really, this production really didn't have a lot to satisfy Gilbert and Sullivan purists, definitely not. Those people who believe that, you know, you can take these period gems and transform them and shine them up again. And, you know, it's like an estate jewelry of a wedding ring that you turn into a brand new marvelous bracelet or necklace. This production fails miserably.
And, and that's too, you know, I like Ethan McSweeney because he did Dangerous Liaison, so I was expecting a lot more, and I was with two GNS purists, and they kind of went, what did you think about the middle? They always do something in Major General, in the I am the very model of a modern Major General, and this year they did the explanation of
The genealogy of all of the artistic directors at Stratford, which in and of itself was funny, but a lot of people wouldn't get it or wouldn't care. It was an inside joke. It is the 60th anniversary of Stratford, so it's appropriate. However, as I say, it is not the kind of thing that is traditionally done where you know, public figures or well-known celebrities or politicians are lampooned and satirized. And outside of that self-referential bit, backhanded homage to the artistic directors at Stratford, the production was devoid of those kinds of topical, satirical references that, you know,
people come to expect from GNS. So you have to listen. Because on the way there, I was telling my friends, there's always modern references. Well, I knew the one, but I thought, listen for more, because I'm sure it'll be really funny. But it didn't work out that way.
No.
Which is too bad. I did like Amy Wallace as Mabel. I thought she was pretty good. Sean Arbuckle is the Pirate King. I don't think he's done, like, when I found out he was cast as the Pirate King, I went, Sean Arbuckle? That's interesting.
And you know, when we have people like Johnny Depp and Kevin Kline playing the roles, you think what Colin Fiore would have done with the role, or a really good classical actor.
Well, they would have fun.
Geraint Wyn-Davies, what would have he have done?
He probably would have. He would be good.
They would have transformed the role in a way that maybe would have been enough to carry the production more. Sean Arbuckle tries.
Yeah.
But he just didn't have that much of an edge to make it, again, with the steampunk idea. He could have had more of a edge to him. You know, I'm not suggesting, you know, Jack the Ripper,
no,
but something with a little bit more of an edge that is, brings in a darker component, you know, to kind of highlight the comedy.
He didn't really make it his own. Usually the Pirate King usually steals the show.
It's, yes.
Between him and Major General Stanley. And in this case, it was like,
yes. Yeah.
Kind of failed. Want to move on? Let's move on to something else.
All righty.
Let's move away from the pirate ship now.
Well, maybe it's about time to return to Shakespeare.
No kidding.
And this is Cymbeline.
Oh.
And this is a play that Stratford has done, I believe, four times.
That's right, four times in 60 years. That's right.
They've always done it very well.
In fact, I
remember Robin Phillips, a glorious production of Cymbeline, where the after intermission, you came into the theater, sat down, and a replica, or it could have been a full-scale model of a Lancaster bomber came out on stage, and it was stunning. In fact, it was a stunning production.
Daphne Darrow designed that show.
Excellent.
Yeah, amazing.
This production was at the smaller Tom Patterson Theater, where, whether by accident or it's kind of a misfortune, I think, of the festival that some of its best productions take place at the smallest theater shorter runs. But this was directed by Anthony Cimolino.
I'm a champion of him. He's like Manette. He's come up from an actor, and he's become, I think he's become, he's one of the best directors at the festival right now. I really do.
He seems to have been the most consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we'll see what he does when he's got the artistic reins in his hands.
Which we're going to get to, because, definitely.
But this is a very, very good production of Cymbeline without exploring new territory. But it's very solid, and with Graham Abbey, a Stratford-raised kid back in the festival ensemble, a lot of people, I think, will be happy to see him
posthumous, yeah,
back. And with Tom McCamus and Kara Ricketts and Geraint Wyn-Davies, they hold down the fort, so to speak.
It's a good solid cast.
And there's a very, very good supporting cast in this play with Nigel Bennett and Ian Lake. And
oh, yeah, all the good guys.
Yana McIntosh,
yep.
Mike Shera, who's doing some good work for the festival. Brian Tree and John Vickery.
Yep.
Both of whom kind of represent Stratford at its best in terms of depth of company.
Definitely.
You know, actors who are more capable of the roles they generally get, but they almost always perform admirably, and they're dependable.
Mm-hmm.
They just get the job done in a very professional manner. It's easy to take them for granted, but it's that kind of depth that, you know, when Stratford is at its best, it is, you know, staging world-class theater. So Cymbeline, the other thing too, I think this was the fourth production that Stephen Page wrote the score for.
Okay.
For Stratford, and I'm not sure, but all of those productions may have been directed by Antony. I'm not quite sure. So maybe they have a friendship that goes back some years. I'm not sure. But this was Stephen's fourth score. And I would suspect he will continue in that capacity. Now, if you were familiar with the music of the Bare Naked Ladies or yes. Stephen's work since then, there's no evidence of any connection. Pop connection.
Totally different.
He totally different.
Yeah.
But it's good to see him at Stratford doing good work as a composer.
Cymbeline is one of the Stratford's really good at reinventing, but staging rarely produced plays. Cymbeline is one, Pericles is another. King John, I think they've done a couple of times. When they stage the rarest Shakespearean productions, they do really well. I can't think of in the last 10 years, a time where I have seen something that is rarely performed that hasn't been a really standout production that's of the season.
Yeah, that's often the case. And Des McAnuff, however little Shakespeare he's done and however mediocre it's been, he has kind of focused during his tenure more on the late works, the late romances, mm-hmm. and he seems to have a connection to that body of work of Shakespeare's. And the one thing, too, that I mentioned in my newspaper review for Cymbeline is that the rumor is that Stratford may do the two Henry IV plays, Part 1 and Part 2, next year.
Okay.
And if they do that, if they are looking for a Falstaff, no one will quite wear the shoes of Douglas Campbell.
No, but...
The late, great Douglas Campbell. But I think Wyn Davies,
yep.
The way that he plays comic roles with depth and the way that he can cast everything in kind of a comic, bittersweet hue, I think that he would be a good Sir John Falstaff.
I think he'd be a good Falstaff, too. We're on the same page for that one. Let's take a musical break. And it's not exactly Shakespeare, but we've got... Oh, this is great. Rob has brought in the Got Mojo 2, the Grammar Blues Society CD. So what would you like to hear? How about Aphrodite's Bodice? Because I think they recently won something in the Arts Awards, if I'm not mistaken. So let's listen to this track, track 5, Leave Me by Leave Me by the River. This is Aphrodite's Bodice on Coral FM.
Now she's left me by the river, a silver dollar on my pride. It ain't the wind that makes me shiver, it's that coldness of her eyes. Heaven forbid I play my cards straight, Lord, I might just go insane. I've been tied up to this anchor, rusted hook and ball and chain. I kept my head above the water, but I can't last any longer. Fine. I know this problem soon.
That was Aphrodite's Bodice from a Got Mojo 2 Grand River Blues, and a track called Leave Me by the River. So I'm here in the studio with Robert Reed from Waterloo Region Record, and he's an arts reporter. And he's been, how long have you been reviewing Stratford?
Since 1984.
Yeah, so that's like a good, that's a good long time. And I guess to, by the time you're, because you've gone to Stratford so many times, it becomes a question of how many times you've seen a certain play and interpretation of it. Then you, do you look to the actors? Do you look to the directors when you're seeing, like, if, you know, we went to see Much Ado About Nothing. So how many times do you figure you've seen that?
I suspect maybe three or four. And I'm always first and foremost interested in the direction or the concept or the vision that is embodied in the directors with his design team.
Yeah, exactly.
What they do. And then secondarily, the actors, unless, you know, like everything in life, we have our favorites. And if it's an actor that I particularly like or respect or admire, then that might change a tiny bit. But normally I'm an idea guy, because that in the whole creative process, I think what really separates artists from non-artists, in whatever medium you work in, you have to be able to manipulate the materials, whether it's playing a guitar or working with clay or putting paint on a canvas. That goes without saying, but what really separates artists, I think, from non-artists is the vision. You know, they look at the world differently than we do, and they have a different kind of contact with reality, and they transform that reality into something new and interesting and provocative, and that is the thing that excites me most about all art, including performance art and theater.
Yeah, because I think if the director is engaged in the vision, then the audience becomes engaged in it as well, especially if it works. Sometimes, you know, sometimes like a director will do, I mean, there's not too many directors that can do this, but Miles Potter doing a Western version of, I think it was Twelfth Night. Was it Twelfth Night?
I forget it, or if it might have been Romeo and Juliet, I'm not quite sure.
Some of them have been shaken up and stirred, and some of them have been a god-awful disaster, and others have been brilliant. So I guess it depends.
Yeah. I believe that the production and the concept or the directorial vision has to in some way illuminate the play, tell us maybe something new about it, highlight something
that
hasn't been highlighted before, but it leads to a better understanding and a better appreciation of the play,
exactly,
the words on paper. And if the production, if you can do that by setting it in Nazi Germany or the First World War or, you know, an a Victorian drawing room, great. But if it's a production that gets in the way of and
the text
removes you away from the text, the words on the page, I think that's when it fails. And in some regards, a glorious failure is more interesting than just a good, solid, professional production. But if you see too many adaptations or reinterpretations that kind of don't do anything for you, you begin to be happy in a good, solid production. And this is where Stratford has led us in recent years. You know, you're happy with the kind of production we got in Much Ado About Nothing and Cymbeline, but neither one of those productions really, you know, hit you between the eyes. But it's so that's where we are, because some of the recent productions of Shakespeare that have tried to do something new have been real serious flops.
Well, hopefully, Well, we'll see what happens in the years to come, but we've got some other shows to talk about as well, and one of them is actually opening this weekend at the studio.
Well, before we get to that, we should discuss The Matchmaker, because that's the last production that opening week. In fact, it closed opening week, and it's a Thornton Wilder play.
Mm-hmm.
The founding artistic director, Tyrone Guthrie, had a role in encouraging Thornton Wilder to rewrite what had been a Broadway flop. So there's that neat connection. Stratford has produced other Thornton Wilder plays, particularly Our Town, a few years ago. And I really didn't know what to expect from The Matchmaker. It was a work I was not familiar with,
mm-hmm.
but it is kind of a Gilded Age farce. It's kind of Gilbert and Sullivan without the music. And it turned out to be one of the highlights of opening week, if not the highlight. And it seemed to be the production that unified most of the critics in their praise. And it's directed by Chris Abraham.
Oh, okay. And, it's the cast. It's the company, isn't it?
It's strong from top to bottom, with some wonderful performances by Tom McCamus, Shauna McKenna.
My two faves.
Nora McClellan.
Oh,
She plays a wonderful role, gloriously over the top. She's, no pretense for subtlety here.
She's from Shaw.
She really came to fame at the Shaw. Then mm-hmm. she kind of fell away for a while, and she's been back at Stratford for a couple of seasons, but she was really allowed to kind of, you know,
be Nora again.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And she.
Oh, good.
This was maybe the sleeper opening week.
Right.
But it's a very good play, and there's some monologues throughout, and even though it's kind of a rags to riches love story, it's a good play, good production, good direction, wonderful cast. So it is maybe a play for those who aren't maybe interested in Shakespeare and or don't find the musicals interesting. The Matchmaker is a very, very high end kind of production that you might see at light entertainment summer theater venues, but the quality here is second to none. So it's a wonderful, pleasurable evening of theater. Big heart, not great intellectual depth, but
no,
it does press some, you know, nice buttons.
Well, when I actually spoke to Shauna and Tom last year about The Matchmaker, they're both looking forward to it because it was, you know, we get to work together again. And Shauna's is it Dolly? She playing Dolly?
Yes.
And Tom is Horace. So I thought, oh, this will be fun for these two. It's kind of a departure from everything else they've been doing because they've been a lot of heavy duty stuff. But so I'm glad. I'm glad that it's good. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yes, I think you'll enjoy it very much.
Right. So this weekend, there's a special production. This is a premiere, must be, opening at the Studio Theater.
Yes, this is a part of the Toronto based playwright Michael Hollingsworth, who since about, I'm not sure, the early 70s, he has been doing a series of hybrid theatrical live performance things called The History of the Village of the Small Huts.
Okay.
And this is kind of a satirical look at Canadian history. And he has written The War of 1812, with this being, of course, the bicentenary of that controversial war. I think some historians are still arguing who won it. Was it the British and, in brackets, Canada, or the Americans? But it's nice to see Stratford doing a different kind of theater with a different kind of playwright, even though they brought in some very good kind of leading edge Canadian playwrights before. But it will be interesting to see what Stratford does with its resources with a play that is actually opening a new venue, the Studio Annex, which is an annex of the festival's smallest theater space, which has been mostly devoted to Canadian works, not exclusively, but and they're opening it on Canada Day as well. So that should be a lot of fun. And it's, a very interesting contemporary play work dealing with classical metaphors and imagery and history in a way that is meant to entertain through satire and parody. And so it's kind of Animal House meets the Donald Crate.
So in a cabaret sort of style.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. And I don't know, there'll be likely a number of multimedia components, and we'll see what Michael Hollingsworth pulls off.
I think that's exciting. I'm looking forward to the annex as well, because the studio only holds 250. So the annex, wow, I don't know how many, I don't know anything about that space at all. So I'm excited. I'm always excited when a new space opens in Stratford. It's always, it's always great. What's next?
Well, I'm not quite sure. My memory doesn't help me in the order of things. So why don't we just follow the Stratford brochure and the stuff that is opening later in the season. We'll just take it as we find it, beginning with the premiere of Wonderlust, which is by Morris Panych and Merrick Norman. It's a Canadian musical based on the poems of Robert Service. And I guess you can't get much more Canadian than
that.
Robert Service, at least the poetry of Robert Service, and the very talented Tom Rooney is one of the co-stars with Robin Hutton, and Lucy Peacock, who never disappoints. She's in this production as well, along with Dan Shamroy and Randy Houston.
So a good solid cast.
So it's a good solid cast. It's at the Tom Patterson Theater, and it will be interesting to see how Wonderlust kind of holds up
against everything else. I think it's going to be, I don't know, just judging by the casting, it's directed by Morris Panych as well. So I think that's really great. I think it's going to be good. I have a good feeling about it, a very good feeling about it. And I've actually ordered tickets to go and see this that's the next thing I'm going to see, I think, actually. But I like Tom Rooney. I think he's done some great stuff in the last couple of seasons. So
he has. I was not familiar with his work prior to his coming to Stratford, but I have been impressed in production after production. So, and with him kind of anchoring this musical, it should be in capable hands. So it will. I'm looking forward to Wonderlust.
Okay. So then,
and another production at the Tom Patterson Theater. In recent years, we have seen some powerful classical theater at the Tom Patterson. And this year, we have Electra by Sophocles. The translation is by the internationally celebrated Montreal-based poet and teacher Ann Carson. And it reunites Yana McIntosh and Shauna McKenna in the co-leads. And McKenna in recent years has done a lot of classical theater.
Medea.
Yes. And I'm looking forward to this production, and it is directed by a Greek director who I cannot pronounce. Maybe you can, Cora, because you're better at this than I am.
Not really.
But apparently he is a young Greek director, and in the opinion of Des Makinoff, is one of the really hot, interesting interpreters of classical Greek drama.
Theater.
And I don't know if he's directed in Canada before, so having somebody with that pedigree and background directing Sophocles, it could be one of the things that you'll want to get tickets for, because it has the potential of being one of the standout productions at Stratford this
Thomas
year.
Thomas Moschopoulos? I'm going to try that. I won't dare try and pronounce the designer's name, but this would be the second time Elektra has been at the Stratford Festival, because the last time I was at the Studio Theater. Was it the Studio? I think it was at the Studio, because they did a trio of Greek plays. They did Elektra, The Birds. What else? What was the other one?
Your memory is better than mine.
It was a trio, because that's when I first discovered Sarah Topham. She played Cassandra, Agamemnon.
Oh, yes, okay.
And all three plays, especially Elektra and Agamemnon, they still stay in my memory. So as soon as I found out Elektra was coming with Yetta McIntosh and Shauna McKenna in the title roles, I thought, this is a don't miss for anybody that likes powerful, what you like to call the shiver factor type theater. This is the type of theater to go and see, for sure. So I'm going to make a prediction now. This will probably be a standout show for the 2012 season. This is the type of theater I like to see. Okay.
Let's, before we go into the Studio Theater, there's one more festival theater offering we have to talk about, and that is the third Shakespeare production, and it's kind of Des Makinoff's swan song.
Oh, yes.
It's Henry V.
Once more into
which is opening in mid-July.
Mm-hmm.
And
who is Henry?
What excites me about this is there's a young man playing Henry by the name of Aaron Crone.
Oh, yeah.
And Aaron Crone was in the Pinter play last year.
The Homecoming. Yeah, he was amazing.
And he was riveting.
Yeah.
Even sharing the stage with veterans like Stephen Wimmett and Brian Dennehy.
Yeah. Definitely.
He stole every time he was on stage, your eyes rested with him. It was a compelling performance. I believe Aaron is an American actor, and this was his Stratford debut last year. And
yeah,
I'm really looking forward to see what he does with Henry.
Me too.
And we'll see what Des Makinoff does with one of his favorite Shakespearean plays. And Des, in an interview I did with him, said that he would have liked to have done the Henry tetralogy, and he couldn't get approval to do that. And Henry V is the fourth play in that group of plays. And so he started with the last one, and we'll see if Stratford goes ahead with
some more Henry's
Henry
next
the
year.
Fourth, part one and two next year. But I'm looking forward to Henry V this year.
We should know pretty soon, actually, because they're announcing, they announce the following season in the middle of the current season.
They've gotten into the habit of doing that, and I don't know if they will wait with the change in guard from Des to Antony. I don't know if they might try to hold back and have more fanfare around that, or if they will follow the pattern established in recent years. The other thing too is sometimes things get leaked, and
that's true too.
Things get appearing in newspapers, and that I think that sometimes presses the hand of the people who would rather hold off and present things in their own way to kind of get their biggest bang for their buck. But that's the way things happen these days.
Yeah, we'll see. Henry has a very solid supporting cast too. Ben Carlson, again, Juan Keoren, one of my favorites, Deborah Hay, And Lucy Peacock, Tom Rudy, and Timothy D. Stickney, who has done some pretty cool supporting roles over the last couple of seasons.
Yes. So, again, it could well showcase Stratford at its best in terms of depth of cast. And, you know, I think that it'll be very interesting to see how this compares to the earlier two Shakespeare productions, Cymbeline and Much Ado About Nothing, which were very solid, very professional. They had a lot to recommend, but they weren't really kind of, you know...
by the seat of you, like, just, oh my God, yeah, enthralling.
Yes, yes. So we'll see if Des can pull anything off with Henry V.
With his last season. Okay, there's a few other shows as well.
There are, and these, I think we've pretty much touched on everyone except for a couple more that's opening in the studio theater.
Mm-hmm.
And one is Daniel McIver's The Best Brothers. McIver, of course, is one of Canada's most accomplished playwrights. And he is starring in this as well with John Beale. And I'm not sure what the play is about. I haven't seen it. I've enjoyed Daniel McIver's work in the past. And it'll be interesting to see what Stratford does this. It's being directed by Dean Gabry. And it is a world premiere. And we'll see what happens.
It's in the studio theater. It's a two-hander about obviously about two brothers, so we'll leave it at that. But McIver is his work is always has something of the unexpected in it, and it always takes you in a different direction that you think. It's always an interesting experience to see a play, one of his plays, or anything he has, any of his films. So I'm kind of excited about this because it's a world premiere. It's in the studio theater, so it could be, you know, again, really, really very. It could be a standout of the season. So we'll see. And then this is our next segment in Canada. So it's directed by Paul Thompson.
Yes, it is about the legendary Canadian director John Hirsch, who was artistic director at Stratford, among other places. Very controversial. And there's a recent biography that has been published on John Hirsch. And this stars Alan Nashman. Alan wrote this with Paul Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And the founder of the whole Canadian theatrical collective method, The Farm Show, and a bunch of productions in the 70s that Paul Thompson did for Theatre Pas Mirai. And I think this is Paul Thompson's first directorial assignment at Stratford, or he might have done another one at the Tom Patterson Theater in the past. I'm not sure, but he certainly hasn't done a lot of work for Stratford.
Mm-mm.
It would appear that Thompson and Nashman have kind of taken a two-man approach to the collective idea of working in collaboration to put together a theater piece. So it will be interesting to see what those two gentlemen do with Hirsch. And as I say, John Hirsch was one of, although he came to Canada as a young man, his whole theatrical career was built in Canada. And I think few would argue that when you look at Canadian theatre, that he would be one of the kind of foundational directors, certainly in the first 50 years of Canadian theatre of any substance, which I date back to the late 60s, early 70s. That was really when Canadian literature really took off. And so he's an important figure. He was certainly important to Stratford. And it's kind of, again, 60th anniversary. It's an appropriate time to pay homage to John Hirsch, I think.
So world premiere. So that is that the season?
That is the season.
That is the season.
And you mentioned a segue between Stratford and Blythe, and I think we're going to have a music break.
We are.
But Thompson's daughter, Seven, is directing a young company production, and it's kind of a revisit of the farm show, and she's doing it with the Blythe Young Company this
right.
year.
Yeah.
So she is kind of taking up the approach of theater developed by her father. I'm sure she will add something unique to that approach, but that is an interesting a link between Stratford this summer and the Blythe Festival as well, which we'll discuss after we hear from Fred Eaglesmith.
That's right. We're going to be talking about the Blythe Festival. In the meantime, here's Fred Eaglesmith with John Deere on Coral FM.
Thanks once again. You got to go home now. You're tired. People are breaking into your houses. You don't have all that crime here, right? You're groovy here, right? Yeah. Oh, you don't, right? No? No. Just the glare keeps them going. I understand where I'm coming from, you know? It's private in a town. This letter that I write to you, Dad, well, I will not sign my name. Though I did not want to tell you, I felt I had to anyway. It's rained for weeks, it flooded the creek, and I lost the whole crop of grain. And the man at the bank wouldn't loan me the money, plant that field again. So today, Dad, so the old John Deere, the man who bought it's gonna fix it up and put it in a museum. Well, I guess that's where this whole thing's gone. A picture for people to pay me to look upon. That's how they lived in the old days, son. The sheep's in the meadows, can't find the cows, little boy. Got a job in town. Yesterday, old McAllister came by and said that he's had enough. Between the government and the subsidies, well, he just couldn't keep up. And welfare checks was farming, well, he simply just rather not.
There's some Fred Eaglesmith and John Deere. This is Coral FM. We're at this is Sound